Good morrow!
I'm Beverly.
I'm Allison.
Welcome back to
Shaky Understanding.
Today we were talking about Henry IV, Part 1.
Get it.
My favorite Shakespeare play.
Is it your favorite overall?
Yeah.
I can see why. And, you know, you've picked a really good one.
Thank you. So you know how cool it is. We're going to get into some Shakespeare abridged. This is the continuation of the quadrology, of the Henriad quadrology. So Richard II ends and Henry IV Part 1 starts up. Henry IV, the new king, is kind of having a rough time. And there's a bunch of civil unrest with Wales and Scotland. And he had promised to go on crusades at the end of Richard II, but he hasn't had a chance to yet because of all that. Now there's this guy, Harry Percy, also known as Hotspur, and he's defeated the Scots and captured this guy, the Earl of Douglas, who's high up, but he refuses to give him to the king for some reason. And the king is mad, but also really admires Hotspur and says, wow, this guy's such a good warrior. He's so good, and he's, like, very noble. And then he starts talking about his own son, also named Henry, who goes by Harry in the court and Hal on the streets, and says, my son Hal is, like, such a little jerk. All he does is drink and hang out with this guy Falstaff, who just hangs out at the whorehouse in the tavern, and he's not noble at all, unlike Hotspur, who's this great warrior. So this is Dad Problems the Play, Part 2. Part 1 being Hamlet. Next up, we get to meet them. We see Falstaff and Hal interact at the Boar's Head Tavern in Eastcheap, aka Hogshead Pub, let's be real, but, like, grosser. And they're just, like, drinking and making jokes and hanging out with whores. And then their other bro, Poins, comes in and is like, hey, there's these travelers coming through town. We should go rob them. It'll be really fun and funny. And Hal is like, I don't really feel like doing that. Poins pulls him aside and goes, no, trust me. We're going to make fun of Falstaff. We're going to pretend to rob these travelers. Then you and I are going to rob Falstaff in turn. Now, Falstaff is this old soldier who's a drunkard and super cheap and loves women, even though he's super fat. And all he does is try to have the best time possible constantly. And he feels really close to Hal, and Hal thinks he's really fun, and so he hangs out with him. But Falstaff is like a lower class person, but feels like he and Hal are like best friends. And Hal does like him, especially in the beginning. Then in the court, we see Henry IV confronting Hotspur and his family, saying, why aren't you sending me these prisoners of war? And Hotspur says, we helped you get the crown and you haven't thanked us at all. And we feel very offended by this. And the king is like, well, screw you guys. And so Hotspur and Northumberland and Worcester, who are all friends and family, decide to make peace with Glendower and Douglas, who are all part of Scotland and Wales, and fight King Henry and rise up against him. So then we get to go more fun and games. Hal and Poins end up pulling off this prank with Falstaff. And so Falstaff robs the travelers, and right after, Henry and Poins, disguised, come out and rob him, with just the two of them. And then they head back to the tavern to hear what Falstaff has to say about what happened to him. We see Hotspur talking to his wife, and he just received a letter saying some of the Englishmen aren't going to join his side and fight the king, and he gets really upset. And we see that his dedication is only to the war, and he's just a one-track mind and kind of a hothead, which is where he gets his nickname from. Then we go back to the tavern, and Falstaff comes in and goes, oh my god, you guys, I got jumped by these 30 men who are all armed, and I can't believe it happened, and they stole the money that I stole. And then Hal and Poins come out and go, ha ha ha, no you didn't. It was totally us in disguise. There were just two of us. You're so stupid. And he's like, oh, well, that's fine. And then they laugh at Falstaff. And then news comes to the tavern that the king wants to see Hal, and he needs to stop messing around in the tavern because war is starting. And Hal and Falstaff play out how it's going to go in court tomorrow. So Falstaff starts as the king and makes a bunch of jokes about how that fellow Falstaff who you hang out with, Hal, is like the best guy ever. And then Hal says, okay, why don't I be the king for a while? And they both take turns playing it that they know that the king is really disappointed in Hal. We see Hotspur and his friends planning for the war, but Northumberland isn't there and no one's quite sure why. And then King Henry and Hal have their confrontation in the throne room, and the king rips into Hal, comparing him to Hotspur and saying that he's totally a disappointment and is just hanging out with these guys who just drink and have sex with whores. while Hotspur is out here conquering territories, and Hal gets serious and is going to lead part of an army, and he gives Falstaff an army as well, plot-wise, so that Falstaff ends up in the war with them, basically. And then on the other side of the battle, we see Hotspur finds out that Northumberland is sick and can't be helping, and so at first he's like, this is great. Now when we win, it'll be like we've overcome these obstacles and our victory will be even greater. And then they get news that Henry IV's army is on its way right now, and Hal is gotten his stuff together and is leading part of that army, and he's like, no, it's fine, we'll still be great. And then Glendower says he doesn't have time to raise his Welsh army if that army's coming right now. And Hotspur says, nope, we're not going to wait. Forget it. We're going to Leroy Jenkins this. We're going to do it right now. Let's go. At the battle, Percy, the House of Percy, which is Hotspur's whole family, go to the king and they ask one more time for, like, payment for their grievances and everything. And Hal ends up saying, you know, I really admire this Hotspur guy. He's, like, clearly a great soldier and a good person. I'll fight him in single combat, but when they go back to Hotspur, they don't really tell him that he says that, and so they end up just fighting this huge war. And we see some interludes with the war. Falstaff and Hal end up meeting on the battlefield at one point, and Falstaff's like, man, this is crazy, right? And Hal's like, listen, I'm doing a war right now. Can we not? And Falstaff is like, do you want some wine? And Hal's like, I need a sword. Can I have your sword? And then runs off to fight some more. Hal and Hotspur end up fighting one-on-one, and Hal defeats him in combat, and then goes to find some more forces. Falstaff ends up coming to that body and goes, I'm just going to poke some more holes in this Hotspur body and then be like, I defeated him. And then when he goes up and tells Hal and the king that he defeated him, Hal's like, whatever, guy. I don't even care about you anymore. And it ends with King Henry and Hal having won this battle, but going to fight more forces led by Glendower and Mortimer in the next episode.
Boom.
Boom. So today, we have with us the Prince of Wales, Hal.
What's up, Hal?
Ladies, good morrow. Good morrow to you both. How y'all doing?
We're doing great.
We're so good. We're so good now that you're here.
Oh, do mine eyes deceive me, or do I have two fair maidens in front of me right now?
Oh my goodness gracious.
Oh, man. Ooh. Hello.
You little charmer.
Very happy to be here. Very excited to be here.
Yeah. So things really turn around for you. Like, you kind of start out as a kind of a screw-off and a, you know, like...
You pull this together. You become very classy by the end of this.
Yeah, some people would say that early in my career I started off by doing some lighter, funnier things, and then I worked into a more serious type of existence, you could say. But really, it's just all about taking what's presented to you. So when I'm spending time with my buddies Falstaff and...
Points.
I'm just, whatever. Let's go to the bar. Let's meet some ladies, some fair maidens. You know what I mean? All right. And then when I'm with my father, it's like, yeah, let's be a little more serious. I'm getting serious vibes off of you. It's time for me to get a little serious, too, because we have some battles to win. Know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're very much a chameleon, and that's a huge part of your character in this, in that you adjust how you behave to the people you're around.
Yeah, I match energies. That's what I like to say. Is that when I'm in a room with somebody, I feel out them, and then I meet their level, and I kind of exist on whatever plane of existence the room is existing upon.
Right.
We picking that up?
I'm totally picking that up.
You getting your follow?
Following you.
Yeah.
And, like, that's reflected even in the script itself, because... at some points you speak in verse, and at some points you're in prose.
Oh, you guys caught, you picked up on that?
I did,
You read some of my words?
Yeah, I saw
some of the things I like to say. That's nice. I don't like to call myself a poet, but I've been known to throw down on a verse or two.
Oh, nice.
You know?
Can we hear some?
Can you hear some? Some poetry?
Sorry.
Oh, y'all embarrass me right now, but I guess so. I guess so. This is a little something I wrote down here. Let me unravel this scroll really quick. Let me just take this out. Mine fair Cecilia, thou art fair in mine. And that's just like a little taste. It's
dang.
Just like, I don't want to get too deep into it, because obviously it's a personal thing. It's meant for somebody specific.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So
absolutely.
I don't want to spoil that for her.
Right. My heart's in the heart's going to pitter patter though.
But really, just take whatever name you'd like to put in there. Mm. For me, it's Cecilia. Sometimes for me, it's also Lorraine. But it just depends on who I'm interacting with at that point.
Right.
And they melt, y'all. They melt.
I believe it. Yeah. I'm melting a little bit over here.
Oh, stop it now. Stop it. A little hot in here. Do you guys mind if I take off some of this armor?
Oh, my God. I mean,
make yourself comfortable, okay? Please.
Is that okay if I just take off some of my armor?
Sure, sure. Go ahead.
Thank you. That's much better. Mm. That's much better.
Yeah, it's better for all of us.
Yeah. Flex this out.
Yeah. So there are a couple of quotes that I was going to talk about in the play that seem, that are maybe like original Shakespeare, but now colloquialisms.
Maybe.
So I was going to ask.
That's a nice word.
Thank you.
I need
a, that's a $10 word right there.
That's a good one. Yeah, that's all right.
One being, the game is afoot.
Oh, snap.
Get set in this play. Whither I go, thither shall you go to.
Did I say that? Is that me again?
I think that is you to your lady, Percy.
Man. Oh, wow.
That's Hotspur. Oh, mixed up the Harrys.
I'm sorry.
Sometimes I feel like you and I are just one and one, you know, kindred spirits. Aren't we all on some plane? Just like
two sides of the same coin.
There you go.
I get you.
Is that something Shakespeare wrote too?
That's not. Exactly. Is that something that you say?
I don't, you know. I feel like at some point in my life, maybe I have said it, but who knows.
Those are the only quotes that I have. I don't really have any questions. It's pretty straightforward. It really is just so funny, which I was not expecting.
Oh, really?
You didn't warn me that it was going to be funny, and so when I showed up to the reading, I was like, dang, we be laughing a lot.
Yeah, it's not like Henry VI.
Yeah, it's a history. Usually, to me, it feels like history belongs in the drama category. Like, I'm trying to think of another, even a history-type film, you know, a modern-day history, something that's funny. There are some things that I would be interested to discuss, or maybe you know about, that I think are in this play that I see in still continually referenced in pop culture. One being, they're talking about a hot wench in flame-colored taffeta. So, women in red dresses are just sexy across all eons of time?
Yeah, there's a sex study about it, too.
What?
Yeah, there's a sex study that says
there's... I'll be wearing red every day.
I know. There's statistical significance. It's not a lot, but there is a little bit that people wearing red are more attractive, are rated as more attractive.
Too bad I'm wearing a blue shirt today and I'm wearing red.
I'm looking great.
Hey, you know, from where I'm sitting, everybody looks good. All
right. Oh my God, stop it, Al.
You guys are both doing fine.
All right. Oh, thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Wow.
Was this all put together just for me? Just for me being here? And
I mean, yes. I dressed up a little. Whatever.
Shoot.
It's my favorite play.
Talk about wearing red. I'm going to get blushed right
now. Oh,
snap.
So good. I feel like Falstaff has become a trope of a character type I see again and again and again and all the time.
This is the first we see Falstaff, and this is a complete construct of Shakespeare. So a lot of the characters in Henry IV, Part 1, are historical figures and are real people. Falstaff is not.
Mm.
And the public just fell in love with him. Because he's kind of the perfect storm of a comedic character where he is really funny himself. Like, he does have some great turns of phrases and, like, ribs with Hal really well.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a fool without realizing it. Like, he doesn't realize that they're making fun of him when he's telling the story of how he was defeated. And they're like, Falstaff, it was us. We know you're lying.
Kind of a Gimli.
Yeah.
Figure of sorts.
Yeah.
Would Gimli fall into that trope that you're talking about?
Gimli, like Lord of the Rings?
Gimli, kind of?
A little bit. I think Gimli's a lot smarter than Falstaff.
Sure.
But he does definitely fall into that trope of, like, I just want to go to war and drink beer and sleep with women.
It's kind of like Nick Miller from New Girl. Because I feel like Nick Miller has a lot of, like, goofy things happen. But he also will, like, be funny, too, on purpose.
Yeah. But I just feel like I see I feel like I see that type of character a lot, but now I'm trying to think of other examples, and I can't think of any off the top of my head, but I feel like similar to, you know, the virtuous virgin who's so good, like, it's a character trope.
Like, from Game of Thrones, the drunk king.
Yes!
Baratheon.
Yes.
Like a low-class Robert Baratheon.
Yeah. So you see it there, or you see, like, Uncle Buck, even, is like...
We're narrowing this down.
I feel like we started pretty broad. You're real broad.
With Gimli and Nick Miller. But we're zeroing in.
We're gonna hit that bullseye soon. It's like, yeah, he played Slughorn.
Horace Slughorn!
Harold Zidler in Moulin Rouge. Basically anything that Jim Broadbent plays. And I love Jim Broadbent. But anyway, I just think Falstaff is the... perhaps original example of this idea of an old, washed up, you know, a man-child.
Hanging out with child mans.
Yeah. I was also thinking Poins reminded me of the Amanda Seyfried character in Mean Girls. Although...
He's a little smarter.
I was going to say, because I came in late to the reading, so I didn't see the scene where he comes up with the plan... After he comes up with that plan in every scene, his lines are essentially one word, and they're along the lines of, yes, I agree. That is good. Also, yes. Me too.
I do love this play and the dichotomy of this super serious political war and then fun bros in a brothel. Like, fun bros in a tavern, I should say. I keep calling it a brothel. It's not a brothel. It's a tavern.
Right. But yeah, if Entourage and House of Cards became the same show, it would be this play.
Right.
2 o'clock in the morning is mentioned a bunch in the play. Is that the witching hour? Does it have some symbolic something or other?
For me, more so 2 o'clock in the morning is about when things are winding down. You leave the bar, you're looking to get some street meat, some food or something like that.
I wasn't sure what street meat meant. It could have been food, it could have been something else.
Oh, no, it's like when you go outside of a bar and they have those bacon-wrapped hot dogs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's kind of some street meat. Or tacos, just whatever's available to you. Sometimes it's just, you know, there's that.
The witching hour is 3 to 4 a.m.
You know what? I totally agree with that. And here's my theory on why. Anything up until 3 a.m. Is very late at night. Mm-hmm. 2 a.m., very late at night. 4 a.m. on is very early in the morning. What's 3:30 at night? It's like too late to be night anymore, but it's too early to be morning.
Your eyes are so wide right now.
See, for me, 3:30 a.m. is a time when if I get to it, if I'm trying to fall asleep and I get to 3:30 a.m., that means that I, at some point in the near future, have to start working on my sleep schedule again. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
It means that I have offset something, and then I know I'm not going to be fresh the next day.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I know I'm not going to be fresh for days coming after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's fair.
So, you said you do a lot of mirroring the energy of the room and getting on the same plane of existence. When your dad called you in and... kind of sat you down and gave you the lay of the land, did you feel that that's when you started to really change your attitude and maybe reset your sleep schedule in a way? Or did you always kind of know it was coming and you just wanted to have fun while you could while it lasted?
Well, I think, first of all, Shaky didn't necessarily capture everything my dad and I have. Uh-huh. You know, we've got a special relationship. Okay. I am him, he is me, we are one. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Me and my pops. And there's a lot of things coming up when he was trying to instruct me on something, and we just kind of are in tune with each other. We just kind of get it, you know?
Yeah.
So I walk in there, he says his part, I say my part, but really the entire time we're just like, yeah, we're vibing. And we know that something's got to come up. So yeah, at that point, I feel like it's more of an awakening for me. Like I wake up and I'm like, oh shit. I've just been having fun. I've been playing pranks and jokes, and now it's like we gotta do some stuff. We gotta kill some people, which I'm not a huge fan of, but sometimes things gotta get done. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, they don't talk. We don't talk about this. It kind of cuts off. But we're all going to the Hogshead. Dad's coming too.
Right.
We're having a good time. You know, he's buying rounds for the entire place, and it is going wild.
I'd love to know what the king is, what it's like when in the pub when the king comes
also,
in.
Also, what's his
when
drink?
He lets loose, oh, his drink? Straight ale. Straight ale. That man is drinking ale, and he can gargle it. Do y'all know baseball player named Wade Boggs?
No idea.
Sure.
So, Wade Boggs is a man who supposedly would drink 70 to 100 beers on a plane on the way to a baseball game and play in that baseball game. I would call Pops like the Wade Boggs of war. He can knock him back, and then he stands up, and you're like, are you going to be okay to drive? And then he could do an Indy
500?
Oh, he could do an Indy 500 while solving a New York Times crossword or something
wow.
like that.
Whew.
He is, man, that guy's got it together. I'm a big admirer of his. All right. So we have this war, barely wash ourselves off, walk into this pub, and everybody's like, oh, I thought you guys were fighting a war. We're like, we did that already. We are done. And then, you know, place goes nuts, people clapping for us, all that. They're like, drinks on us, and Pops is like, no, drinks on me, because he wants to show off a little bit. He's looking pretty
right.
mighty and strong.
Mm-hmm.
One thing leads to another. I black out for a little bit. When I wake up, I'm in the middle of a river with Dad. And this is the part they won't tell you about this part.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the middle of a river with Dad, and suddenly we are on a hunt. And I love hunting.
Like
with
for
dad.
Boar or
oh.
like for like deer or what
whatever,
do you mean on a
really,
hunt?
Really whatever we can get. Boar, deer, most dangerous game, which is Maine, whatever whatever we're kind of in the mood for. But you know, and we're just out there and I'm like, I'm just coming back to life. And then I look over at him and he is focused in, and he is dialed in like nothing I've ever seen before. This
nice.
Is one of the most impressive men. So if you want to talk about mirroring energies, if you want to talk about being one, you stand next to this man and suddenly you feel that elevated experience where you're on another plane with him. Do you know what I'm saying right
I
now?
Do.
Are you picking up?
I'm picking it up.
Are you picking up?
I'm getting it.
So what was the question?
How are you and your dad now?
Oh, yeah. We're good. We're solid. We're doing well.
Yeah, because he really does rip into you. In the first scene of this play, he's like, oh, these wars are happening, and my deadbeat son, like, and just, like, straight up, right
yeah,
from the beginning.
But that's just kind of our pattern, you know what I mean? Oh, my deadbeat son, my hard-ass dad, whatever, we're just
buds. And then
buds.
You come together.
We're just buds.
Cool.
We'll go to a joust. We'll, you know.
Carouse.
We'll, yeah.
Drink some ale.
Breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you know what I mean? So it's a little hot in here. Can I take off some of this chain mail?
I mean,
sure,
yeah,
okay,
please.
Great. I'm
going to
take off another layer.
Great.
Yeah.
Woo! Oh, man. Down to the tunic,
better,
you guys.
Down to the tunic.
I was just going to talk about the humor, really. I know we've kind of talked on the comedy in it, but people talk a lot about, oh, Shakespeare, like, he invented so many new words and new phrases, and he's such an inventor of language, and that's why he's important. And again, I think he gets put into this box or on this pedestal, and it becomes very intimidating to read or to learn more about. And I think I would suggest looking at this play more, only because when you read it aloud, or probably when you watch it, actually probably even more when you watch it,
yeah,
I guarantee you will be laughing. Its humor is timeless. And the fact that Shakespeare was so smart to key into things 500 years ago that we even today can still relate to on a very personal level of, you know, matching energies and getting that to me is where the true genius lies. Because comedy is so hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's so hard to write good comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And this play is hilarious. We were all cracking up and repeating over and over again one of the lines of, I had rather live with cheese and garlic in a windmill than live with him, is essentially paraphrasing how the end of that would go. And it's, you know, even in 2017,
that
you can picture a windmill full of cheese and garlic, and you know how awful that is, and you just know. It's such a burn, and it's such a good burn. And then there's an amazing scene between Falstaff and the hostess of this tavern.
I think her name is Mistress Quickly, and she comes back a lot.
Is her name Mistress Quickly, or is the line, Mistress, Quickly.
No, her name is Mistress Quickly.
That's amazing.
It's like a characterization that she's like, you know, a little loose, even though she's married right now, but she won't be married for long.
Brilliant.
She'll become a widow, I think, in the next episode. And then get to flirt with all the single lads.
Oh my god.
Yeah,
I cannot
she doesn't
wait.
Do that already.
I cannot wait for right. that scene. I cannot wait for that scene. But there's a scene between Mistress Quickly and Falstaff that you could do it on stage in modern dress and it would all be fine. There's just such great lines in it. At one point, Falstaff calls her an otter because she's neither fish nor beast and no man would know where to have her.
Dang.
And she goes, "Every man knows where to have me." And it's, again, even in 2017, we get that. We're on that level. We're on that plane. We know exactly what that means. And again, such a burn, so funny, just timeless humor.
There's this thing in America, in some cities, called drunk Shakespeare, where often they'll, three people or something, or like a cast of five or seven, will do a scene or a play, and the audience has to pick one of them to drink a bunch of booze before they do it.
Only one person is drunk?
And then they
Whoa,
do a play.
I would love to see that.
And a lot of the times they do tavern scenes from this play. Because they're real fun.
Yeah.
When one person's drunk. Or when everyone's drunk. Because some
yeah.
of them, they just do it in bars.
Whatever you want to
do. And everyone's just talking. And then at some point they'll start one of the tavern scenes. And they'll have been drinking
yeah.
the whole night.
Cool. I'll say one more thing and then we can move on. When someone gives you a letter in a Shakespeare play, you better deliver it, and you better read it, or shit's gonna go down.
Yep.
That's pretty much all I have to say on that.
The courier service is of vital importance to livelihoods
oh, man.
And lives. And
I want to hire back First Herald to just go out and shout my letters at people rather
yeah.
than writing them down. That is not reliable.
Oh, you know Harry?
Is that his real name?
Yeah, you know Harry?
He demanded that we call him First Harry.
Yeah, his name is Harry. He takes himself pretty seriously.
Yeah, he's very
yeah.
serious.
Yeah.
He does.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a good guy.
He's the sweetest.
Yeah.
He's a wonderful person.
Heart of gold, that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There aren't really any modern-day adaptations, but there's a great film version.
There's a great film version called The Hollow Crown, starring Tom Hiddleston as Hal, and it's the best, and I talk about it a lot, so that's all I'll say.
I guess I could see that. I don't know. That feels a little... He feels a little skinny for my taste.
You
he's
need
doing,
a portlier
I mean,
Hal.
He's doing... Not portlier.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
I mean, just take a gander. But I work. I work on this physique, alright?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I've earned it.
A little more built.
Yeah, maybe a little more built, which he's gotten there. You know,
Hitty's
gotten there, alright?
Mm-hmm.
And Kong Skull Island, I'm looking forward to that.
I just found out he was in it today, and I don't know what to do, because I have no interest in seeing that film, but I have every interest in seeing Tom Hiddleston.
Apparently it's a fine recreation of a film. Recreation of a film. Recreation of a film? Hey, you know, are they going to spell it the same way? I'm going to say it the same way. Ray Larson.
Oh, yeah.
Brie Larson's in it. John C. Reilly.
I do love me some John C. Reilly.
Yeah.
Anything John C. Reilly plays, Falstaff.
Oh, that's a great one.
Hey,
why did we start
guys,
there?
We
John
there.
C. Reilly is Falstaff.
There.
That's
we
real. That's
there.
Real.
Oh, my
we
God. And I love John C. Reilly with all my heart.
Mm-hmm.
I do think you could probably update this into a modern day story.
Where would you put it? What are the kingdoms?
You know, it needs to be like college football teams.
Could be college football teams.
Something very bro.
Something very bro.
Rival surf shacks on a Hawaiian island. Anything that we have to do to
yes.
shoot in Hawaii, I'm okay with that.
Yes, rival surf shacks. I was also thinking.
I kind of just want
to. I was also
Maui.
Thinking crew teams, crew
okay.
rowing. All right. You know.
Okay.
I think you could do it
on a Hawaiian island. Rival crew teams on a Hawaiian.
Hockey
sure,
teams
okay.
on a Hawaiian island.
Outrigger canoe teams.
Sure,
there
yeah, yeah, all right.
Hawaiian.
Cricket teams on a Hawaiian island. Croquet teams
so
on a Hawaiian island.
I'm up for all of it.
You could always do what Hamlet, starring what's-his-name, did, where it's a corporation. And, like, his
right.
dad wants him to take over
yeah,
the corporation.
Yeah, I was thinking that, too. Factories and things are the obvious sort of
right.
take into kingdoms.
Uh-huh.
But even just... rival fraternities.
Yeah.
Would totally work.
Fraternities. American government.
Especially.
If you said it in the American government, maybe. You could have those families like the Kennedys.
Yeah.
Like that taking over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like a politician's son for sure.
Yep.
That'd be a thing. And it's like, he's like, Twitter has videos of him like doing beer bombs. And they're like, you can't keep doing this, Hal.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cool, let's make that. Great.
It's getting a little hot in here. Can I take this tunic off? Is that all
right?
Oh
my gosh.
Yeah, that's fine.
Is that all right with you guys?
Yeah, it's okay.
I'm cool with it. You're cool with it?
Do you need
me
to go to another room?
Yeah, you can take it off.
It's fine.
I can do that here.
Yeah.
All right.
Andy Dwyer, a little bit young, but also kind of Falstaff in the beginning.
I'm sorry, I was distracted. Go on.
And, yeah.
Andy Dwyer, yes, Parks and Rec. Okay, yeah.
A little bit, maybe.
Yeah, especially, like, Andy Dwyer to Star-Lord.
Like, yes.
If you just take that as Hal's, like, whole arc.
Yes, Chris Pratt is Hal.
Yeah, Chris Pratt.
Got it.
Just Chris Pratt,
I like
period.
That. I like that.
His life.
Yeah. He did some work to get in that 0-30, and I really like it. I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love that you brought up that this play is very comedic, because, I mean, clearly that's why I like it. As you know, I'm not a super big fan of histories, but this one is more about people. I think what's really cool about this play is it is just... it's funny stuff. Like you said, it's unerringly funny still now today. And I think a lot of that is just because Hal and Falstaff are bros. And Falstaff, though lower, still like talks to him as an equal, and Hal is like down for that. And one thing that's cool in Shakespeare times is Falstaff is often attributed to this one actor, William Kemp, who is one of the clowns Shakespeare used a lot. And throughout Shakespeare's history of plays, he pretty much used two actors for the comedic parts, for the clown roles. One of them is William Kemp, who has more slapstick stuff and more goofiness. And then the other one is Robert Armin, who did a lot more logical and funny because he knew more than everyone else. So that's like Festy, probably one of the Gravediggers, the one that's really smart, stuff like that. And so you see kind of a difference in the way that the comedies were, or comedic parts even, were just written. And yeah, the crowds just fell in love with Falstaff, and Shakespeare was kind of pressured into putting him in more and more. And that's, we'll get to that play when we get to that play. But yeah, that's it.
But yeah, and you're right too, there's different types of humor within this as well. There is some slapstick, or the ability to put in a lot of slapstick in, like, the robbing scene, but then there's also just some of that really good, smart, witty banter.
Especially in that scene where we see Falstaff pretending to be king. Because
yeah,
that's such a trope of a low-class person making fun of the monarchy, that the groundlings, basically the people in the cheap seats, would just love, because they don't get to do that.
Right.
But they know it. Everyone knows that.
Right. Cool. Would you like to read a scene from your life with us?
Shucks. Yeah, I guess I could do that.
All
right. I feel like we're digging up old bones, you know what I mean? But I guess I could say things.
We're just doing Chris Pratt and...
Jurassic World.
Jurassic World! Thank you.
Yeah.
We're going to read Act 1, Scene 2. This is the first scene where we see Falstaff and Hal in the tavern, and we kind of get an introduction of what their friendship is. Now, Hal, what time of day is it, lad?
Thou art so fat-witted with drinking of old sack, and unbuttoning thee after supper, and sleeping upon benches after noon, that thou hast forgotten to demand that truly, which thou wouldst that truly know. What a devil hast thou to do with the time of day? Unless hours were cups of wine, and minutes chickens, and clocks and tongues of bods, and dials the sign of leaping houses, and blessed sun himself, a fair hot wench, and flame-colored taffeta. I see no reason why thou shouldst be so superfluous to demand the time of day.
Indeed, you come near me now, Hal, for we that take purses go by the moon and the seven stars, and not by Phoebus, he that wandering knight so fair. And, I prithee, sweet wag, when thou art known as king, as God save thy grace, majesty, I should say, for... grace, thou wilt have none.
What, none?
No, by my troth, not so much as will serve to be prologue to an egg and butter.
Well, how then? Come, roundly.
Marry then, sweet wag, when thou art king, let not us that are squires of the knight's body be called thieves of the day's beauty. Let us be Diana's foresters, gentlemen of the shade, minions of the moon, and let men say we be men of good government, being governed as the sea is by our noble and chaste mistress, the moon, under whose countenance we steal.
Thou sayest well, and it holds well too, for the fortune of us that are not, that are the moon's men, doth ebb and flow like the sea, being governed as the sea is by the moon.
Mm.
As for proof now, a purse of gold, most resolutely snatched at Monday night, and most dissolutely spent on Tuesday morning. Got by swearing to lay by, and spent with crying bring in. Now in low as an ebb, as the foot of the ladder, and by as in as high a flow as the ridge of the gallows.
By the Lord, thou sayest true, lad, and is not my hostess of the tavern a most sweet wench?
Low as the honey of Hybla, my old lad of the castle, and is not above jerking a most sweet robe of durance.
How now, mad wag? What, in thy quips and thy quiddities, what a plague have I to do with a buff jerkin?
Why? What a pox have I to do with my hostess of the tavern?
Well, thou hast called her to a reckoning many a time and oft.
Did I ever call for thee to pay thy part?
No, I'll give thee thy due. Thou hast paid all there.
Yea, and elsewhere, so far as my coin would stretch, and where it would not, I have used my credit.
They're so cute.
I love it.
They're the best of friends, giving each other crap. Delightful. Thank you so much for coming and hanging out with us.
Thank y'all for having me.
Yeah.
I'm just going to leave these things here. You guys can hang on to this too.
Oh,
I got plenty back with the steed, so you guys just enjoy those.
All right, thank you so much.
Of course, thank y'all for having me.
I'm Allison.
I'm Beverly.
Deuces, peasants.
All right, ready?
Yeah, I'm good.
Good
morning. Oh, no. I couldn't remember what
you
we said.
Ready.
I couldn't remember what we said.
I quit. I can't work like this.